Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff answering questions emailed to me about Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism. I take questions of general interest, not technical philosophy and not practical politics. I do this every week or two and post it on my website. It's also available on iTunes. If you want to ask me a philosophical question, feel free. Just send it to leonard@peikoff.com. And my last name is Peikoff, P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F as in off. Is environmentalism the new communism? What are the similarities and differences? An excellent question, but for my real answer, you would have to read my forthcoming book, The Dim Hypothesis. This is a big issue. Both of these movements are strongly statist, of course, but I say no. They are very different. Just to knock this off to you, and you have to read your book, environmentalism is nihilism. Communism is religion. Environmentalism is Kant. Communism is Plato. If you want just a tiny example, it's the new left versus the old. That's just a tiny hint. But if you ask this question, I have to say you'll be interested in what I wrote. Okay, get the wording of this. Is it permissible or moral to date a non-objectivist? Well, permissible, there's no such concept in this context. If you're asking for a moral principle, this is not arrived at by permission, but by thought based on reality. Permission only applies to parents to children, or prison guards to prisoners, or army brass to enlisted men. You're talking in a broad moral principle. And you're talking, by the way, about dating a non-objectivist. So you're not even talking about going with. So there are very few requirements here. It depends on what you are looking for, if you're looking for important values, some kind of important essential affinity. If that's what you want to find, you could date anybody unless you know knowledge of the contrary. But by the way, you do not have to agree with them. There are explicit ideas on the date, which could be who knows what, mistaken, unthought about, or irrelevant. You don't even know yet whether there's something really good or not. So what she thinks about politics or physics or even God, I wouldn't worry about when you're just starting to date. And now I'll just make a confession before leaving this question. When I was really young, I have to stress that, that was my idea of dating. I had a kind of a mental question, an exam in my mind, you know, a few essentials from the different branches, and I would get them out at each date to see what she thought. And of course, when that was discovered, I was roundly ridiculed and kidded for years. I mean, I went to really ridiculous extremes. I had no money, and I saved up to go to fancy nightclubs like the Empire Room at the Waldorf in New York. I remember I took a kindergarten teacher, and this cost, to me at the time, a fortune. And while they were playing this music in this elegant place, dancing and so on, she and I were having a heated argument about how you should teach addition to people in kindergarten. It was completely wasted. I don't even know to this day she might be a very nice person. So that is 100% wrong. Don't even think of that. Just date if you think, you know what you want and you have any reason, or even no reason. It's just a blind date if you trust the person. Now I'm taking the next question because a person says he's 19. I'm a homosexual who only finds romantic value in full masculinity. But a fully masculine mind, in my opinion, is possible only in heterosexual men. And I'm only, therefore, attracted to such men. How should I deal with this painful situation? Well, God knows that is certainly painful, as you stated. In fact, it's hopeless, because even if you took a straight man and converted him to being gay, he would by that fact be disqualified. So you're hopelessly lost in that situation. You either have to get rid of one half or the homosexual orientation, and I don't think that's possible today, not to my knowledge, or you have to change your ideas on what kind of partner you require. And again, I don't know. I'm not in psychology, but I would think that would require, at minimum, some psychotherapy. And I don't know that that can. I don't know what a psychotherapist can accomplish. Around what time would you say that you became a full-fledged philosopher, as opposed to a philosophy student? I would say into the 1970s, when I was into my first book, The Ominous Parallels, and coming to some ideas and connections on my own. So that's a good 20-plus years after I met Ayn Rand. And then the questioner goes on, and when would you say that you became an objectivist as opposed to a student of objectivism? Well, if you mean someone who has a modest understanding of the foundation, the metaphysics and epistemology, I would say the early 1960s, but Nessa Arts about 10 years after I met her. But I would say I did not fully understand it inside and out, top to bottom, with all of its, at least all of the implications that come up in our lives. I wouldn't say I did not understand that till my book on OPAR was finished, because I learned a lot from that. So that was 40 years after I met Ayn Rand, and I devoted my life full time. So you couldn't say I was a fast learner. We disregard ESP and the like, because we accept the five senses as the only base of knowledge. Would it therefore be rational for a man who was blind from birth to disregard claims about reality based on the sense of sight? I smiled when I got this, because this is exactly one of the arguments I used to give my class in Denver almost 50 years ago, and they struggled trying to answer till I help them out. And I would say about any claims by the sighted or by anybody who claims a faculty beyond his, he has to judge by the evidence available in his context. So for instance, if he hears claims to ESP and he cannot validate them in his context, all that other people can say is, well, if you had the intuition, you would see he should reject them. And of course, the ultimate reason is, if it is a fact of reality, if it can't be known by one sense or senses, it can by others or by reasoning therefrom. But in regard to seeing, this is not a question of their say-so. Others can demonstrate to him in terms that he himself can verify over and over consistently that they have a knowledge that he doesn't, because they can continually say what is going to happen, where, when they walk so many steps, this is what they're going to hit. When he walks so-and-so, he's going to fall. It is obvious to him that he is lacking a sense. In fact, there's never been a case that I know where a person who's blind wonders in the name of reason whether he's blind. In other words, whether he's defective in a sense. Can irrational philosophers still be called philosophers? Yes, certainly they can. The subject is defined by the subject matter, the kind of issues and questions, not by the rationality or irrationality of the practitioner. Just as I've been asked, isn't it a contradiction to talk about a Christian moralist? Because Christians advocate sacrifice of values and morality should offer you rational values to pursue. And I say, and Ayn Rand said, you must distinguish the broad concept, code of values, accepted by choice, from any specific version. And so Christianity is a morality, but a wrong one. But you can't deny that it's a morality. A very simple analogy would be if someone is a bad tennis player, is he still playing tennis? Well, obviously he is. Why did Cheryl Taggart in Atlas Shrugged have to commit suicide? And for those who haven't read it, she was a young girl, completely innocent, conscientious, naive, non-intellectual, a very positive view of man, a potential hero worshiper. And then she found that the man that she was in love with was a total, unbelievable monster. And that he reflected the entire world around her. Now, Ayn Rand wanted to show through Cheryl that a good but completely non-philosophical mind is doomed to destruction in the world as it was depicted in Atlas Shrugged. Basically because there's no way for such a person to understand or deal with people, no glimpse of a hope. Eddie Tiger had Dagny, but she had absolutely nothing except a discovery that she was looking up to and enshrining utter depravity, and the world was cheering him on. To her, the world was insane, and she couldn't live in it. She couldn't function. Now, Kira in We the Living was caught in an impossible world, but she had a way of escaping. But here, with Cheryl, the problem is the nightmare is in her mind. She can't answer, can't understand, so there is no escape. How much should you expect to love what you do for a living? Should you settle for non-love, but find ways to like what you get paid to do? Or is settling like that selling yourself short? Well, to begin with, in regard to emotions, there is no such thing as should. You can't will them directly. So all you can say is this question. Obviously, you should want to experience love so far as it is possible to you in the context. You can't, quote, expect to use your word more than what the context permits. What are the alternatives open to? What are your basic values? What are your skills? This is a person, I think, in their 30s. What are the needs, your practical requirements? What are the opportunities? You have to take that into account, I mean, because you have to survive. Now, other things equal, of course, your values are the primary. And if you have a definite valued choice in regard to career, and everything else is equal, you should expect, because you should be the consistent like Rourke. You should say, I'm going to have total, absolute love of what I do. But suppose, for whatever reason, that is not possible to you, and you have to support yourself elsewhere, then you have to do it. You try to find some way to get to the field you want. Try to do it part of the time. And no one can quantify, well, you should expect 30% more or 50% less. And I'm afraid to say that as our society gets more controlled, it's harder in good professions to experience the love of Rourke, because government is such a destructive omnipresence. Suppose you are a doctor under Obamacare. Well, you cannot have the pleasure Dr. Hendricks did in Atlas. So, and a lot of them are retiring for that reason. So what you should expect, you have to say, what is possible? Don't settle if you can realistically get all or part of what matters to you most. You can't expect more. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead, and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.